This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Judd Apatow, is the creator and executive producer of Undeclared, the new Fox comedy series about a group of college freshmen living on the same floor of a dormitory. The central character is a geeky-looking kid who wants to transform himself now that he's left home. It's as if the boy in the high school sitcom Freaks and Geeks was going to college. Apatow is the executive producer of Freaks and Geeks, the critically acclaimed NBC sitcom that premiered last year and was canceled after just a few episodes. He also was the co-creator and executive producer of The Ben Stiller Show and wrote for The Larry Sanders Show. Let's start with a scene from the first episode of Undeclared. The main character, Stephen, is talking to an old friend just before leaving for college. Stephen's body has been changing, and he hopes his image is about to change, too.
60% of all people meet their spouses at college.
That means my future wife could be, like, seated right beside me.
You and a girl.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, why not? Exactly, because these girls at college, they don't know me. They don't know who I am.
Yeah, they don't know that you threw up on the bus in fifth grade.
Exactly.
That you had to have your finger reattached after that wood shop.
The point is, I'm tall and handsome and I've gained weight and I've, like, finally got a fashion sense. Man, it's like the beginning of a whole new era.
I asked Judd Apatow if he saw college as a place where you could reshape your life and personality.
I assume most people in some way have this feeling, but I know I did. I always dreamed of going to a new location and getting a little more respect than I was getting. And when I was a kid, I was the funny guy who hung around the athletes. So I always wanted to be more of a normal kid who had a better shot with girls and wasn't goofed on as much. And for me, that fantasy started when I went to summer camp. I would always pray that at summer camp, somehow I would play baseball better and no one would realize that I was awful and that my popularity would be a little better as a result of that. And I felt that way going to college as well. I had a girlfriend in high school, but I still felt like a goofy guy, and I loved the idea that you could go somewhere new and be anyone you wanted to be. Of course, everyone busts you within 3 or 4 days, and you are in exactly the same place.
Why were you hanging around with the athletes in high school?
I had a couple of friends who were very nice guys who I met in fourth grade, and as they turned into athletes, slowly I became the athlete's friend. They got better and better at sports, and I was awful and never got better, so while they went out for the football team, I sat home and watched the Mike Douglas Show and Dinah Shore by myself at home every day. There's a sequence in a Freaks and Geeks episodes where one of the geeks, Bill, goes home and there's nobody at his house because his parents are divorced, and he puts on the Dinah Shore Show and he watches Gary Shandling perform, and he eats chocolate cake and grilled cheese sandwiches and has the time of his life, and the TV is his best friend, and that's encapsulates my you know, childhood experience.
You said that in high school you were often goofed on. What's an example of a really embarrassing way that you were goofed on?
I was goofed on in elementary school. I remember pretending to be a cow and eating rocks to amuse the other kids, or putting quarters in my nose and pretending I was a slot machine. That would close my eyes a couple of times and open my nostrils and a quarter would fall out. This is very different than your interview with David Chase, by the way. I know that. I heard that interview and he didn't do that kind of thing.
No.
But so I was always looking to entertain the other kids as a way to make up for the fact that if I was goalie in soccer, they would probably lose.
I want to play a clip from the first episode of Undeclared. And this is, I think it's Stephen's first night in college. He's at his new dorm, and there's going to be a hall party that night at the dorm. And then his father shows up, played by Loudon Wainwright. And as if being visited by his father in the dorm wasn't embarrassing enough, the father also drops a bomb. Stephen's mother wants a divorce.
What happened?
I don't know. She says she's miserable. She doesn't want to have sex. She feels dead inside. Life is passing her by. I don't know.
I don't want to talk about this. Dad, we're in the middle of a party, okay? This is my first day at school.
Stephen, I've given my entire life to you. So if I need to talk to you, you're gonna listen.
I'm sorry. So, why do you think Mom feels dead inside?
I don't know.
Has she said why she doesn't want to have sex with you?
You know what? You're right. This is not the time. I don't want to ruin your first night, so, I'm gonna go crash at Uncle Bill's.
Okay, good stuff.
I just wanted to let you know that's where I'm gonna be in case you want to get in touch, all right?
Cool, thanks.
We'll talk about this tomorrow,
okay? Right, yeah.
All right? So have fun at the party.
Thank you. Have fun, Uncle Bill's.
Oh, I will.
Cool. Bye.
After the father leaves, Stephen has to fake that he's a happy and confident college student. What inspired that scene?
When I was in junior high school, my parents got divorced, and it had a big impression on me and the way I looked at the world. So when I started working on this idea, I had been listening a lot to a Loudon Wainwright record where he sang about fighting with his son. He has a song called A Father and a Son. And I like the idea of a kid trying to start his adult life at the same time his father has to start his adult life for the second time. So one person is restarting and one person is starting, and that they have somewhat of a parallel experience. He moves into a dorm, the dad moves into an apartment, and they're both trying to figure out who they are. And that was the inspiration for it, listening to Loudon Wainwright's album, and as well as my experiences as a kid watching my parents go through their divorce, as well as every kid I went to school with. One by one, all of my friends went through the experience of watching their parents get divorced. So we started talking about it on Freaks and Geeks. We showed a character named Neil, who was a geek whose dad was cheating on his mother, and he figured it out, and he was stuck with his secret, and he didn't know whether or not to tell his mother. And then when he tells his mother, she tells him that she has known for a long time, but she didn't want to do anything about it because she wanted the family to stay together, basically until he left for college. So in my head, I thought, well, this could be what the next stage of that story would have been, the mom dumping the dad at the moment the kid leaves for college.
In the scene that we just heard, the father, played by Loudon Wainwright, says, you know, and your mother doesn't want to have sex with me anymore. And the kid, Stephen, just really tenses up. He doesn't want to know about this. Was that typical of the kind of thing that you and your friends really didn't want to know about?
There's nothing worse than being a little kid and having to find out about adult problems. And it, for me, was always very uncomfortable, and I begged and pleaded to be told nothing. And I was told everything. And it is a very uncomfortable thing, and it's also a very comic thing because it's information a kid really is not prepared to process, and it forces a child to become an adult at that moment, because it is the moment that you realize that your parents aren't perfect and that potentially the advice they've given you throughout your life may have been imperfect as well, and that you're going to have to start making choices about whether or not what they have told you is correct. And that's a scary time as a child, but it's also an experience everyone has to go through. I mean, people have that moment when they go, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about, or what was Mom saying with that? That's not right. And it's natural, and I think it's really funny and human, and so it's an area that I find interesting.
The first episode of any series usually establishes the premise of the series and gives like an establishing shot for each of the characters, what their basic personality is like. And then usually the characters change a lot as the shows go on and as different writers handle those characters. What are some of the changes you've been seeing to the characters you've created as other writers get their hands on them?
This has been a unique experience because when we started shooting the first episode, I still hadn't figured out who the characters were. I hired actors that I liked, and since the experience of going to college and living in a dorm is moving into a room and being surrounded by strangers and having to figure out how you're going to get along with them, I thought it would work well to hire a bunch of kids and observe their natural chemistry and develop the show based on what was actually happening with the actors. So it's not so much that the scripts were handed off to writers who changed the characters. It more had to do with the natural development of the relationship between our actors and all of the writers paying attention and trying to put some of those nuances into the script. A lot of it is still fiction, but if we notice that two people don't seem to like each other as much as other people, that seems to enter our show. If two people are funny and warm with each other, that becomes part of the show. That's partially because I think you get a more truthful three-dimensional character, and it's also because I'm not imaginative enough to think of a character.
Are there mistakes that you learned from while you were producing Freaks and Geeks, things that you've since applied to Undeclared?
No. One of the nice articles when Freaks and Geeks was canceled was written by Robert Lloyd in the LA Weekly, and it was basically a letter to Paul Feig and I, Paul Feig being the creator of Freaks and Geeks, saying, please don't think you made any mistakes and do not learn anything from this situation. Make no adjustments in your future. And I've tried to listen to that. That was a very unique situation because at the time Paul Feig thought of that idea, his main concept was people are sick of all of these shows about handsome kids and their problems being written in the manner of a 45-year-old man. And so we thought, well, this can be an anecdote to all of those shows because it will be funny and it will be more truthful to what actually happens when you're a kid. And we thought it would go through the roof. We thought, you know, we were up against Cops on Saturday Night. How can we not win? And one of the lessons we learned was America loves Cops. That was the first lesson. Then they moved us to Tuesday, and we learned America loves That 70s Show. And now that That 70s Show is the lead into Undeclared, everything seems to be working out. But we knew we were going to get canceled very early in our production season, and the only thing that was preventing us from being canceled immediately was this enormous mountain of press begging them not to cancel us. So we shot a final episode in the middle of the season because we knew any day we could get the call. So we shot it early and we had it in the can. So if they canceled us today, we've already shot some sort of conclusion to this story. And as a result of the fact that we knew we would probably go down, we didn't really take any notes from the network or make any adjustments, and we really followed our hearts about where the show should go, and it became more of our personal art project. I used to say to Paul all the time, this show is being made right now for its cable run and for showings in the Museum of Broadcasting. It's not really being made for NBC. And that turned out to be true. And a year later, they ran it on the Fox Family Channel. And they ran it every week in order. And the ratings were very, very high. Whereas on NBC, we were only on 12 out of 26 weeks. So there was really no way for the audience to find the show and get into a rhythm with our storyline. That doesn't mean it would have been a hit, because it still might not have been. But we didn't really get a shot to find an audience for a unique show.
My guest is Judd Apatow, the creator and executive producer of the new Fox comedy series Undeclared. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Judd Apatow, the creator and executive producer of the new Fox TV comedy series Undeclared. It's about a geeky kid who has just gone off to college. It's as if the boy in last year's high school sitcom Freaks and Geeks had just graduated. Apatow is the executive producer of Freaks and Geeks. In this scene from Freaks and Geeks, the main character is sitting on the curb with his nerdy friends. As they talk, they watch with envy as the jocks and cheerleaders flirt with each other across the street.
What do they have that we don't?
Good bodies. So he can throw her over his shoulder. Big deal.
He should use his legs more. He's gonna throw out his back.
I don't know. I mean,
My mom says that women prefer guys with a good sense of humor.
But you're not very funny.
Screw you, I'm hilarious.
Oh, how witty. Get this guy on Hollywood Squares.
I overheard that Todd Schellinger takes off his shirt when he makes out. Why would he do that?
Why would anybody do that?
Probably to show off his chest hair. I know that's what I'm gonna do. Go ahead, laugh. But all cool guys have hairy chests. Selleck, Reynolds, Rockford.
Hey, what about Mork? He's got more hair on his hand than Sam has in his pits.
Shut up! Will girls ever like us?
Let's talk a little bit more about Freaks and Geeks. Why don't you describe what the premise was?
The premise of Freaks and Geeks was a family, the Weir family, which consisted of Sam Weir, who was a geek, and Lindsay Weir, who was a freak, which is a term that represents potheads, burnouts, the kids who kind of didn't care much about school, who were kind of going nowhere. They were also kids who were having a good time, and most of them were from broken homes, but they were having trouble. And basically, it was about a kid who was a freshman in high school trying desperately to hold on to his childhood while his sister was trying hard to become an adult. And it was about a family that loved each other, not a family that was broken. The thing that I always thought was great about Paul's idea was that he made sure that the kids loved their parents and that Lindsay's journey as a misfit wasn't about that her parents screwed up. It was just about that she was very, very smart and suddenly all of the rules didn't seem to make sense to her. On the pilot episode, she tells a story about how when her grandmother died, everyone else was at the cafeteria in the hospital and her grandmother started dying. And she said to her grandmother, "Do you see a light?" And her grandmother said, "No." And it basically shook her to her foundations and she stopped caring about school. So she went from an A-plus student to someone who didn't care and was interested in finding out about other aspects of life. And she was questioning her parents' ideas. So that was basically the premise of our show.
Did you relate to the character of the sister who was very smart but was hanging out with a group of people who were more like slackers, and her kind of intelligence wasn't necessarily respected in the crowd that she was starting to hang around with?
I definitely related to that. My friends were on the football team, and they were smart, and they did go to good colleges, but the fact that I was into things that were different when I was a kid, I was into comedy and I was the station manager of the radio station, wasn't very high on their lists of interests, and they saw it as something that was different. They didn't think it was bad. They were supportive, but I'm sure it amused them. And so I related with that in some sense. Earlier in my high school career, in junior high school, I hung out with some kids that were very nice and I watched them turn into potheads, and then I stopped hanging around with them. So I related it to that experience because I was terrified. I remember there was a moment when we tried to buy pot from this senior in junior high school, and one day my brother walked up to me, and he was friends with this pot dealer, or used to be, and he found out I was trying to buy pot, and he basically said he was going to beat my head in if I ever tried again. And I often think that if I had received that first bag of pot, I wouldn't be where I am today. I who knows where I would be. I'd be writing for that 70s show. I don't know. I'd be writing all those Tommy Chong jokes.
You knew at a young age that you wanted to be in comedy. What did you see and hear as a kid that you really liked and aspired to?
The first thing I liked was the Marx Brothers. Around second, third grade, I became obsessed with the Marx Brothers. I remember writing a 32-page book report on the Marx Brothers, and it wasn't even assigned in class. I just wrote it for myself. And I think I was attracted to their sense of anarchy. They were saying that a lot of the systems that run the world are ridiculous and make no sense. And I think as a little kid who felt like an outsider among other kids, I liked the idea of somebody knocking down the system. I wasn't consciously aware of that. And then later, when I was in third, fourth, fifth grade, it was the height of Saturday Night Live. Monty Python movies were coming out at that time. George Carlin was putting out his best records. Richard Pryor was putting out his best stand-up material. Steve Martin was peaking and exploding. And I couldn't have enjoyed it more. There was nothing more fun than trying to stay up on Saturday Night Live and watch the show, even though I was a little kid and I would usually fall asleep 5 minutes in. I just loved it. Couldn't get enough of it. That turned into a love of stand-up comedy, which led to me getting a job as a dishwasher at a comedy club and doing anything I could to be around it.
Judd Apatow is the creator of the new Fox TV series Undeclared and was the executive producer of Freaks and Geeks. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Judd Apatow, the creator and executive producer of the new Fox TV sitcom Undeclared, about a group of college freshmen. He was also executive producer of last year's high school series Freaks and Geeks. He started as a stand-up comic. You did a comedy show on your high school radio station, and from what I've read, it sounds like you interviewed a lot of comics for the show. And name comics like Steve Allen and Jay Leno, maybe before Jay Leno was famous, but still, what was it like trying to get professionals to be interviewed by you, a high school kid, for your high school radio show? It wasn't exactly going to sell a lot of tickets to their gigs or, you know, get them a lot of national attention.
They did the interviews because I was calling publicists from New York, and I would say I work for WKWZ Radio, and I would never say it was a high school station, and I would trick them into giving me a half an hour with their client. Then I would show up with a tape recorder that was from the AV department and was like an enormous boom box and at, you know, Jerry Seinfeld's apartment or whatever. And it was basically an excuse for me to meet people that I looked up to and have 45 minutes to say, how do you do it? It was just my instruction manual. I didn't air most of the interviews. I just kept them for myself. But it was an amazing time, and I was so driven to do this. I think it was because my parents had gotten divorced, and it was a time of a lot of drama in my family, and I had to find something to distract myself and also a way to survive in this world because I lost a sense of safety. So I decided to interview these people I liked and become a comedian using this information. So I interviewed Seinfeld and Harry Anderson. I interviewed most of the writers from Saturday Night Live, like Franken and Davis and Michael O'Donoghue and James Downey. I interviewed Guido Sarducci and John Candy, Harry Shearer. Everybody that I liked, I would hunt them down. And I did get an enormous amount of information that was very helpful, and most of them were nice, and it only made me want to do what I thought I wanted to do more.
How old were you when you started doing stand-up?
I was 17. I started during my senior year of high school on Long Island at the East Side Comedy Club.
What kind of jokes were you doing?
I remember I used to say to the audience, I don't know how to handle hecklers, so I like to practice, so if anyone would like to heckle me, please do it now. And then the entire audience would start screaming and cursing at me, and then I would say, yeah, see, I got nothing. I would do jokes like that. I had a lot of jokes about how bad I was. I would finish my act by saying, you know, Jerry Lewis said, you don't learn how to be funny by getting laughs. You only learn how to be funny by not getting laughs, and I have received a college education tonight.
How did you start writing for other comics?
I was known as someone who had a good act, and I don't think I was a very good performer. So people would just say, do you want to write jokes for me? And I was looking for some other income, and comedians are generally willing to buy jokes. it's just most comedians want to keep their jokes for themselves. So I started selling jokes to a ventriloquist here, people that are nothing like me, as a way to make some extra money. And then at some point, Gary Shandling signed on to do the Grammys, and someone recommended to him that I could write music jokes. So he called me while I was on the road at the Dallas Improv and said, "Do you want to write jokes?" And I said, "Yes." And then I stayed up till 4 in the morning writing jokes and sent him like 12 pages of jokes, like 100 jokes the next day. And he liked a lot of them, and we became friends, and he used me for the Grammys a few more times and eventually hired me to work for the Larry Sanders Show. But that's the kind of thing I would do when I was starting out. If someone needed jokes, I would write 100 jokes. I would always do way more than was necessary as a way to prove that I could do it. And I always try to inspire the writers on my show with stories like that, because it is what it takes to succeed in a business that, where a lot of people are trying to get in.
Can you remember one of the jokes you wrote for Gary Shandling for the Grammys or for your audition?
One of the jokes that I wrote was, he was introducing the judges and he said, "God, I wish I had the courage to break up with my mother." Another one was, a lot of people ask me why I'm involved in the Grammys. Why are you hosting the Grammys? What's your connection to music? Well, my girlfriend used to do the guy in Uriah Heep. Those are probably the only two jokes I got in, and there was an 800 better jokes that Gary had. I generally, when you write for people like him, I've written jokes with Jim Carrey and Dennis Miller. All you are is a pleasant presence that makes them focus to write the jokes themselves. And the thing that I was always very good at was writing down what they said really fast and reminding them later that that was the good joke. I wrote very few jokes for any of those people.
What was it like to go from writing jokes to actually writing situations? You know, where you're writing dialogue, and it has to be something funny, but it's not just a joke.
I didn't know how to do it at all, and when I started writing for the Larry Sanders Show during its second season, Gary would always say to me, "Oh, you're going to learn so much," and I learned everything about writing from Gary, and also I worked for an animated show called The Critic that was run by Al Jean and Mike Reese, and James Brooks was the production company, and he was around a fair amount. And all of those guys preach honesty in the writing, and I just tried to do what they told me to do, which is to, in a respectful manner, reveal what's happening in somebody's mind, their pain, their triumphs, their goals, their sadness. And if I do it honestly, the drama should work and the comedy should work. And I look at movies like Terms of Endearment as, you know, the benchmark for doing that well. For me, there's nothing better than Terms of Endearment, and I'm always using that as an example of what I would attempt to do, something that's funny and tragic and hilarious all at the same time. It's why I like Loudon Wainwright's music, because he does that as well.
My guest is Judd Apatow, the creator and executive producer of the new Fox comedy series Undeclared. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Judd Apatow. He's the creator and executive producer of the new Fox TV comedy series Undeclared, which is about a group of college students, freshmen, who are living together on the same floor in a dormitory. Judd Apatow also was the executive producer and one of the writers of the series Freaks and Geeks, which was about a brother and a sister in high school. You've had to direct, particularly in Freaks and Geeks, actors who are very young and don't have a lot of experience. What are some of the things you learned about how to work with young, inexperienced actors who are very talented, but it's not like they've done this a lot before?
When it comes to young actors, it really just depends on the person. The kids on Freaks and Geeks were very prepared when they came to work every day. They had an enormous amount of ideas, and they were very comfortable in their own skin and with their parts. So they didn't have to reach too deep to get where they had to go within a scene. And if I gave them space and let something naturally happen between the young people, I sound like Jerry Lewis now, then hopefully something magical would happen. And how I tend to do that is to shoot two cameras all the time, allow the kids to go off page if they feel like it, and try to capture a real moment.
Can you give us an example of that?
When we shot the pilot, for example, Jay Baruchel had to kiss this girl he has a crush on. So instead of choreographing a makeout scene, I just said, okay, we're going to put two cameras on you and make out. And they were very awkward and uncomfortable, which they needed to be for the show. And she starts unbuttoning his shirt. And Jay got very nervous and he didn't know what to do. So he started undoing the strap on her shoe. And it's really sweet and funny, and it's exactly what Jay would do in life, and it's my favorite moment on the show. It's just a little choice, but it's something that I never would have thought of.
Does it make you feel really good and maybe even a little victorious to see the kid who really thinks of himself as a geek and is really kind of awkward and not handsome by, you know, model standards, kissing the girl, and he really likes this girl a lot, and she likes him, and she's smart and attractive. Does that make you feel good?
On the show? I mean,
to see that and to have created it, you know, as opposed to, like, two fashion models kissing each other.
I guess, you know, the point of it all for me is that I always felt like this geeky kid in high school who would one day have his day. And I always thought, this isn't my time. One day I'll have my time. One day people will appreciate my interests and what I'm really about. It doesn't matter that I'm bad at sports, because when you're 30, no one cares if you're good at softball. And now I have done well. I'm proud of the work I've done. I married a beautiful woman and had a beautiful child. And I like letting that kid get the girl, because he deserves the girl. It doesn't mean it's not going to be an enormous struggle. And occasionally as a child, I did get the girl. But I'm proud to let the geeks win every once in a while.
Judd Apatow is the creator and executive producer of the Fox TV comedy series Undeclared.